very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, it's Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus, on a Monday morning with my co-host Matt Barros. Again, we are recording this Monday morning. This is before the Kyle Shanahan afternoon conference call. So if anything changes there, injury reports or anything, this will not reflect it, but I think we'll cover everything anyway from last night's 49ers victory. Kind of a weird victory, but incredibly necessary, 30-24. Not a great first half. Incredible third quarter, and then just hold on for dear life in the fourth quarter. Let's just get to the big, you know, whatever viral moment quickly here. The Nick Bosa walking into the NBC post game interview with George Kittle, wearing a MAGA hat, really wanted to do that. Eric Branch, the Chronicle, asked him about it afterwards, and he just said he didn't want to talk about it much, but he feels it's important. Obviously, this is going to stir up a lot, given the moment in time, given the political situation. Barros, I have something to say on it. I think, you know, I've made myself clear, but I'll say a little bit more. Barros, anything to note on what that meant, what that signified? Could it be any kind of disruption? Could it be applauded? Where are you on that?
Well, I mean, I didn't love that he takes the opportunity to, you know, interrupt other guys' on-field interviews with the MAGA hat and then says he doesn't want to talk about it. I mean, talk about, hypocritical. You're obviously on national TV when you're doing that. So if you do something like that, you have to talk about it. You probably have to talk about it more at length. And who knows if he will or not. Obviously, this was a thing with him at Ohio State. He was very vocal on social media about that. When he got to the NFL, though, he was quiet. He sort of kept his political beliefs under his vest. That obviously is changing now. And I didn't quite get what he said about why he decided to do that now versus in the past, because he said the conditions have changed. I don't know whether was it climate has changed. I don't know what he was alluding to, like the media climate or the climate in the building. He didn't have a multi-year $1 million of
there
money.
You get, that's one. That's
previous
one.
In the previous presidential cycle. He does now, so that gives you a little bit more confidence, I think, to say what you feel, and it's his right to do that. He can do it all he wants, but if you're going to do it, then I feel like you have to go all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he meant when whatever the environment or whatever has changed is that there's two things. He thinks the political environment is right for it, you know, can disagree or agree with it. I think he thinks this is, you know, a critical moment for what he believes in. That's fine. He also, I think, is alluding to the fact that he's one of the best players in the league and has grown in credibility in that locker room. I've written about it. He's a leader. He speaks to the team on the Saturday walkthrough. It's a big thing. He thinks through it. He's careful about it. This is a leader of the team, unquestioned captain. Because he's a great player, because he works so hard, because he's not outspoken usually. And then when he says something, it matters. He chose this moment to do what he did. He, you know, it wasn't even at a podium. It was on national TV at a postgame show. And he walks into it clearly, you know, planned or, you know, whatever, however long he planned it. You do it. You can get criticized for it. I agree. That's the one thing I think. He interrupted somebody else's interview. And now at some point, George Kittle might have to answer for it, or Brock Purdy. And maybe they loved it. I don't know. I kind of think they didn't. But, whatever. That my point with all these things, when athletes or whoever else make these gestures about whatever, is you can do it. It's America. That's great. Although maybe in America in a little while, you can't do this stuff in another way. We'll see. But you also can get criticized for it. You also putting yourself out there. You're making yourself the center of attention. I don't think Nick Bosa is ever going to get in trouble in that locker room for something like that. Maybe if he like pounded his chest and started, you know, giving a speech, it's a different thing. Maybe that's why he was reluctant to talk much about it at the podium. But, this is a leader of the team. is allowed to express himself in some ways, he also feels like he will cannot get, you know, chided for it in that locker room. In fact, you know, he's just Nick Bosa. I will say, you know, God knows people know my political beliefs. I don't think there's any, you know, any, I'm hidden any of that. I don't inject it into my writing, I don't think, but I see people comparing it to Kaepernick. And you know how I felt about Colin Kaepernick. It was 100% his right. He was standing up for something greater than themselves. He was potentially sacrificing his job, and he did sacrifice his job for it, which is the ultimate respect I have for it. Nick Bosa is not sacrificing his job for this, but it is different. It is different because Kaepernick was, you can, whatever you think about the national anthem, I think many things about the national anthem, it is considered incredibly important to a large segment of America. That moment is considered important, not to everybody, but it is considered important to that segment. And he did impose himself on that. I don't think I had no problem with it whatsoever, but I got that people could be offended by it. That part I understood. The NBC postgame set is not a sacred institution. It's just a postgame set. And
it's not?
Yeah, I don't think it is. Not unless they're eating turkey or something. So I don't, he did impose himself upon it. I get it. And if his, if George Kittle or Brock Purdy, whoever else thought it was a distraction, I get it 100%. I'll absolutely believe and write it if that's what I understand. But it's not the national anthem. And again, I'm going to get ripped for this. I do believe this. It is not equivalent to Colin Kaepernick just by the way these institutions are viewed. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to understand that there are people who feel very strongly about that moment in national anthems. I don't myself. I don't. But I know many people who I like. I know many people who are smart who do feel very strongly about it. Kyle Shanahan feels very strongly about the national anthem. So and I think Kyle Shanahan is not a right winger in any way. But I value that people have respect for that moment. And again, I wouldn't have felt that way myself. I didn't feel that myself about Kaepernick. I wrote that again and again, that I respected the hell out of Kaepernick for exposing himself to the criticism and to the sacrifice. And he was even saying, I could be sacrificing my life. And we know from the moment, the violence of that moment, the reaction, he could have thought that clearly. So, but I respected that. Yet you also have to respect the disruption it caused. And the NBC's postgame set is not the same thing. So I'm going to get laced for this, I'm sure, Barros, but I really do feel that. But I respect Kaepernick more for it because of how much he put himself out for it. The disruption, the annoyance, the response was going to be far more for Kaepernick, and he knew it, than it will ever be for Nick Bosa. All right, let's get to the game. I got myself in enough trouble there. You wrote it, I wrote it. Like, this is kind of a pitiful moment for the 49ers. I had to go into the break, and even Shanahan said at 3-5 would have been terrible. 4-4 ain't great when we know how they got there. But if they had lost this game, if they had let it slip away, or if they had not had that third quarter surge to beat a really not good Cowboys team, that's the worst Cowboys team I've seen in 3-4 years. That would have been extremely problematic for the 49ers. I don't know that they would have been out of it. I know it would have been sucked a lot of spirit out of them. Barros, like, what did this mean? What does it mean going into the bye? What does it mean for their trade deadline? What does it mean for the season?
I mean, I thought that the important part was just keeping your head above water over these first 8 games. You know, they easily could have succumbed to all of these injuries, and there were more on Sunday.
Yeah, of course.
With Jordan Mason, I don't think that that's long term. But I mean, they were already down Christian McCaffrey. Then you lose Jordan Mason. Very easy to succumb to those injuries. And that was sort of the theme of Sunday's game, is that guys stepped up. Isaac Garendo stepped into the Mason role, who had stepped into the McCaffrey role. Ricky Pearsall stepped into the Juwan Jennings role. They made up for the loss of Jennings and Brandon Ayuk, with George Kittle and Debo Samuel having really outstanding games. So, I mean, I think that's the point, is that they fought through a very tough beginning of the season. And we don't have to go into all the things that they faced, but they came out of it 4-4. Not great, but not, also not awful. And here they are ready for a second half, which, I mean, we don't know how it's going to go. But they believe that they're going to get reinforcements back. They're going to rest a little bit. George Kittle was banged up for this game. Fred Warner acknowledged what we were all sort of suspecting, that he really hasn't recovered from that ankle injury. He keeps, in fact, he keeps aggravating it each week. And he hasn't had quite the same fire he had over the first three games. Although I would say that yesterday's game, you started to see that he had a forced fumble, a couple of nice sticks.
He sees the Cowboys, I think, his eyes.
Exactly. Lit. Well, Debo sees the same thing.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Pavlovian to the 49ers. They see that star on the helmet, and they start foaming at the mouth a little bit. But anyway, my point is that they have endured. I guess that's the best way to put it. The first half of the season, and now they're ready for the second half of the season. The caveat I will note is that the second half of the season ain't easy.
No.
It's got 9 games instead of 8. All sorts of really kind of wicked road schedules.
Five road games out of 9.
Yeah, and 2 games in Florida, back to back week where they go up to Green Bay and then have a night game in Buffalo. Buffalo in December. You think that game's going to be easy? And oh, by the way, Buffalo plays on artificial turf, so that's going to be a big storyline going into that game. I do think that the 49ers feel, I don't want to say proud of themselves, but they feel relieved that, that they're 4-4, right in the thick of that fierce NFC West battle going into the second half of the season.
Tied for first in the NFC West. There you go. You know, they're going to get Christian McCaffrey back. We don't know what kind of performance level they're going to can get from McCaffrey, how long he can play on this, this leg injury. But you got to imagine they'll be better with McCaffrey. I think the offense has changed without him. It just systemically, it just has to work differently when you don't throw to the running back like that. I mean, you can't throw to the running back as much as you throw to McCaffrey, but it's just different. And maybe they get the full Dre Greenwald or Greenlaw to 40 or maybe 70% of them or 80% of them. And that changes. We know they do look slow at linebacker other than Warner without Greenlaw in there. Although, Devondre Campbell had a good game. Like I got, we've kind of, hit him a few times, but he played well, I thought. I just think they play better against the Cowboys. I don't know what. They just look better against the Cowboys. They almost screwed it up, but they just look like a much better team. They, they out-yardage them by a ton. They get the 3 turnovers or 2 turnovers. I'm sorry. Do not turn it over themselves. But the McCaffrey thing is big. And again, we keep talking about it. Maybe back for, I would guess, the week after the Tampa game, the home game against Seattle. Is that right? Yeah, that would be a pretty good game to have him back for and to win that game. And you would look really, really good if they go 2-0, win at Tampa, and which they are very good coming out of the break under Shanahan, at least lately. Then you win at home against Seattle. I think they would feel really good about their NFC West chances and maybe start to look at maybe try to get that 2 seed if they can. I don't know if they can, but they can start looking at it. You got Adam Peters, Washington Commanders. You're chasing for that 2 seed now. My goodness. But yeah, there are things for them to look at, and it's been sloppy and they really should be 6-2 because they gave away that Rams game, they gave away the Cardinals game, but you can't get them back. And they were lost them for reasons. We see if they can tighten this weekend. We've seen it. Although I think Bosa said a wise thing, among some of the other things that he said that, okay, keep talking about past times when we did this, we keep talking about, this is a new team. This is a new players. You can't just keep talking about, we just got to do it. I agree with that. But one point I made in my column, and I think everyone noticed, what would they be if they didn't have this draft class, Barros? I mean, these guys are not just playing. They are playing pivotal roles. They are making third down catches. They are running the ball in important times. Grendo is their 4th running back, right? McCaffrey, Elijah Mitchell, Jordan Mason, now Grendo. They're to their 4th tailback, and he's gaining yards. This is their best draft class. I don't know when. I mean, definitely in the Shanahan. The Debo Bosa years, great, those two guys. But the depth of this, the way they plugged in right away, I don't know where they'd be without these guys.
No, I agree with you. And Garendo was really one of the biggest stories of this game because he started looking like the guy that they were scouting at Louisville. Runs hard, runs fast. I mean, he has this unbelievable 40 speed, but we hadn't seen that. I mean, maybe on that last run in Seattle that he had, but certainly in training camp, he never seemed like he was at full gear. And I think that's a confidence issue. You're learning the offense, and with every game, with every carry, he's gained a little bit of confidence, and with that confidence, he's gained a little bit of that speed. And you just saw that he's got that that extra gear that is paired with some heft too. He gets around to the outside, and it's hard to hip tackle him there. He's very good at kind of staving that off and getting a few extra yards. So he's good in that that aspect. They targeted him four times in the passing game, which is for this season is huge.
Oh, immense, immense.
Jordan Mason has been targeted 12 times all season. Mm-hmm. So Guerrero got a third of that in a little bit more than half the game yesterday, or probably three quarters of the game. So I think that's big. You know, he basically allowed the 49ers to have a bridge to getting McCaffrey back. And you know, kudos to the 49ers for having faith in him. I mean, you and I have been saying, why isn't this team bringing in a running back? And we were both asking each other that when we saw Jordan Mason lying on the ground at the end of the first quarter. And kind of seemed like the 49ers were in dire straits at that point. To his credit, Randall doesn't look like a hesitant rookie anymore. He looks more like a veteran. And you see him and Pearsall sort of following the pattern that we saw on the defensive side earlier in the season with Malik Mustafa and Renardo Green. Injuries give these guys opportunities, and these guys have been running with those opportunities. So that's another first eight-game theme for this team, that these rookies have taken those chances and, in Isaac Grendo's case, literally run with them.
And your guy, Dominic Pooney, I mean, he's just like an automatic now. You just put him down there, and he's going to play well. He's going to play right guard, and I don't know if he's going to be, you know, other than Barrows, he's going to be offensive player of the year, but he is a really good right guard at a time when they absolutely needed a right guard. Just plop him in there. You're not worried about protection breakdowns. Guerrero had a protection breakdown, absolute whiff on a key moment. If that's a fumble there, Barrows, good Lord, how Purdy held on to that ball was pretty amazing. But that happens. He's a rookie. You know, you're going to have mess ups. And who knows, maybe if another tailback was in there, he wouldn't have made it block either. But that was a big time whiff. But, you know, Malik Mustafa is going to be a good player. Renardo Green is going to be a good player. Like, they just got good players out of this draft. I don't know. I mean, they lose Adam Peters, they get good players. I think that's the message here. Adam Peters was dragging them down this whole time. I say that kiddingly for Adam. I'm sure he's a loyal listener to 49ers plus minus. But the proof is there. RJ Gillen, I mean, Tariq Ahmad, I mean, these guys, something happened here, and they got their guys, and they would be in some deep, deep water if they didn't have them. My point is I do think they need to make some trades here, Barrows. We can get into that. Everyone's fascinated by this. I'm going to write something later this week, I think. Because what if they get more injuries? Like, that's like, you can fill it out here, and you might get, you know, get McCaffrey back eventually. You get some other guys back, but you could have more injuries. You could, you know, what if you lose Guerrero? I hate to say players getting hurt, but what if this happens? I think they could use, whether it's that position, probably not training for running back, but they could use another pass rusher. We keep saying it over another defensive tackle, just in case Leonard Floyd or someone else needs a break or needs two games off or whatever. You know, God forbid they lose Bosa for three or four games. It's possible. I think they just need fresh bodies. I just think they, you know, it's almost like a baseball pennant race thing where you've held on and you want to add a little boost of adrenaline. Doesn't have to be a superstar player. Obviously they'll be shopping for stars. I don't know if one's gettable, but I just think this would be the season where a couple of these, you know, new players, Charles Omenihu, that level of player, could really tilt things a little bit in the middle of a tough season.
Yeah, and last night's game, Sam Okwuonu made some plays. He's a defensive end. He's their third best defensive end right now. He rushed a lot on obvious passing downs from the inside, which he's done in the past. He played defensive tackle in Tennessee a couple of years ago. So he's got experience rushing from the inside. They're going to get Yetur-Gross Matos back at some point. He's technically a defensive end who also can play defensive tackle. My point is that they seem to have enough bodies, at least, at defensive tackle. They're not going to find Javon Hargrave's replacement on the trade market. But it does seem as if defensive end could really be the spot where they could use somebody. And, you know, Za'Darius Smith on the Cleveland Browns just seems like the perfect answer. He's a veteran. He's still got some pass rush pop. He's a big-bodied guy. You can play him on base downs. You can play him on obvious passing downs. He's going to give Leonard Floyd a respite. And I think it's clear that they don't want to play Floyd a lot of snaps. He hasn't come close to Nick Bosa level snaps in any games this year. He's 32 years old. So they're cognizant of keeping him fresh because they know having those two pass rushers is incredibly important in playoffs. So, you know, it just seems to check all the boxes. You know, there's availability. We talked about Arden Key. We saw that the Patriots didn't play Josh Uche on Sunday. Perfectly healthy. They didn't play him for some reason, probably because they're trying to trade him somewhere. He's a different type of player. He's more of a rush specialist, but he's younger. The 49ers sign him. That's just one more defensive end that they could have in coming years, because this is perennially a spot where they're kind of dying for help each season. So they tried to address that with Drake Jackson. He's done for the season this year. They used a fifth rounder last year on Robert Beal Jr. He's not getting a lot of snaps, not much of a factor when he does play. Sam Okwuonu has easily surpassed as the number three. I mean, Sam Okwuonu against the Chiefs, and I haven't looked at this yet, but he had 37 snaps against Kansas City. He played 51% of the defensive snaps, more than half of the game. Sam Okwuonu, who no one had ever heard of before this season, is now in that role. And to his credit, he's played well, but I don't think you ever want him to be the guy opposite Nick Bosa. Not this season. Maybe he develops into somebody, but you know, there's too much on the line this year for that.
And what if he gets hurt? What do you have behind him? I keep saying this, like, guys get hurt specifically at certain positions, and we've seen it, and you just need to have somebody ready to go behind them. And they've burned through their depth. They really have. And they've done a great job finding these guys, plugging them in. But it just, when you're down to it, you can't say, okay, now we're fine if no one else gets hurt. You can't say that. And not with four road games left, four of them are multi-time zone. They have the back-to-back. These are all, and they're not staying out east, right? I think I remember that when the back-to-back, yeah, they want to get Thanksgiving. I don't think they're doing the stay out east thing anymore. They might do it again in future years, but I know they got tired of it. I think the 2022 season, was that the Greenbrier? The last time the Greenbrier, and they did not like it. I think that's the one. Didn't they lose to the Falcons the second game?
Oh, right. Yeah. It was Carolina, Atlanta.
Yeah, and I had heard that they felt kind of tired. They're locked in, you know, kind of an isolated place. They've been there before. It's really nice, but it kind of wore down on them. They've had all these week-long trips. They had the month in during COVID in Arizona. They kind of just don't want to do it anymore. Now, they might get back to it next year. I don't know, but I had heard that they just don't. And specifically, I was told they are not going back to the Greenbrier. Nothing bad about the Greenbrier or the people there. It's just not something they want to do and be away from their families that much, specifically on Thanksgiving. But that will come with a trade deadline. There's, you know, who knows? One thing I was just looking up, when they did do a dump one time in 2020 when everyone was hurt and they traded Quan Alexander. Oh, yeah, they traded him. So what? Fifth round pick. You know who they drafted with that fifth round pick? You see me tweet that out earlier today?
Is it Debo?
Diamador Lenore. So, like, these picks matter. I mean, listen, I'm all for spending picks when you've got a chance to make a difference for a playoff season. I'm not saying hold on to every pick, but fifth round pick is not nothing. And if you could turn in, I mean, Diamond Lenore is one of the best cornerbacks in football this season. And he's acrobatic, you know, attacks the ball. You know, that's kind of like those Cowboys cornerbacks were in the past, where they attacked the ball. And, you know, when Dak Prescott's just kind of throwing up for grabs, you want a quarterback who comes and attacks the ball. Defensively, I think they're playing fine, by the way, Barros. I mean, not great, but I think they're playing fine. You know,
fourth quarter
was it? Listen, they're not great. I'm not saying they're playing great, but they're not bad. Offensively, the stats are good. I think the red zone stuff had been a problem. They scored three straight in the red zone in the third quarter. We'll see with McCaffrey. I think this, if you had to put one, blame one or the other, let's take special teams to the side. We know how terrible it's been, although it was fine last night.
Yeah.
Would you say it's been more an offensive problem this season or defensive problem?
Oh, yeah, I'd say it's more offense. I mean, even last week against Kansas City, the defense was not stellar, but it was fine. I mean, you know, all sorts of picks the last two games. They're getting the ball back. No, for sure. And I think that just to kind of further that point, the secondary, the cornerbacks, this is the best cornerback play I've been covering this team since 2002. It's the best cornerback play I've ever seen from the 49ers. And, you know, Charvarius Ward.
The days of Ahmed Plummer and, you know, Mike Rumpf. I don't know.
A little bit better than the Rumpf years. Yeah, for sure. And the who is the Dre Kirkpatrick that they brought in?
that was the ultimate word. Yeah.
That might have been a nadir of cornerback play. All right, I've got a question for you. Let's just say that Christian McCaffrey is back in week 10. What do the 49ers do with Jordan Mason in the second half of the season? I mean, he was arguably their offensive MVP in the first eight games. At one point was leading the league in rushing. Does he go back to the bench? Is he Mr. Fourth Quarter again? Or do you have some sort of system now between McCaffrey and Jordan Mason?
I just think with the care they need to take with McCaffrey not to overwork him. I know they try to do that and they just keep playing because he's so good, but you really got to be committed to it. You go two series McCaffrey, one series Mason, two series McCaffrey, one series Mason. And maybe if Mason's hot, you go two series Mason. Obviously, taking 23 off the field for any length of time is never smart, but I think you need to protect him. I think you need to protect him against himself. This is leg injuries that, you know, he's had them. We know that's one of the reasons they got him, because Carolina was a little worried about his leg injuries because he lost most of 2 years to, you know, these muscle injuries, hamstring, calf. It's tough for running backs. He's been incredibly healthy for the 49ers until this season. I just think you need to make sure if you have an option, you have a viable option, which they've sort of had Elijah Mitchell in the past, but Mason is more dangerous running the ball, I think, even than Mitchell. You just got to commit to that. You know, so what was McCaffrey, 24 touches a game last season? Maybe you drop that to 18. You know, in the playoffs, it's different, or a must-win game, it's different. But for these games, you know, at Green Bay, at Miami, you don't need to have them run the ball 18 times and catch some six. Maybe run them 14 times and catch five. And those other possessions, those other series, you have Jordan Mason trying to pound the rock. It's a different offense. I know Kyle doesn't love, like, I have to call this offense with this guy and this offense with the other guy. No, he doesn't like that. He likes plays that set up plays, and so it has to be within the same scheme, relative same personnel. But I think I might just commit to that. And, you know, it would be really nice if they felt good throwing the ball to Jordan Mason. They just clearly they do not. Clearly, they do not feel like he's a pass-catching threat. That messes them up a little bit. But that running, you know, I think it's nice to have a little combination of different kinds of players, even if it messes up the scheme a little bit. I'd give Mason the ball 8 times. Does that sound okay to you, Barros?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you definitely would be telegraphing your intent.
Yes, that's what Shanahan hates. Yes, yes.
And he doesn't like doing that. Certainly in these first few games after McCaffrey comes back, they're going to be careful with him. And you can see McCaffrey being the third down back, something that the 49ers are absolutely missing in the first eight games. You could see them working him back into the offense that way. But I just think as if it all goes well, if it all goes according to plan and McCaffrey is back to full form, that, you know, in December and January, when these games are really important, very, very hard to see Shanahan doing anything differently than he did for most of 2023. That may be how it shapes up. You know, right when they made the trade for McCaffrey back in 2022, they still had Jeff Wilson. Yeah. And Wilson was doing well. Wilson was their number one back at that point. He was good out of the backfield. And they used both of those guys on a bunch of plays. I guess it was against the Rams. I guess it was McCaffrey's first full game. Mm-hmm. But you could do that because both of those guys were threats to run the ball or catch the ball out of the backfield on any given play. It's not the case with Jordan Mason. You would not be fearing a pass to him early on. So hard to see Shanahan juggling those two guys in that fashion.
Yeah, I can't really see those two guys in the backfield together. It's just one of them has to be the fullback. Like that in the scheme, you can't have two tailbacks. And they're basically going to be two tailbacks. And who's going to have blitz pickup? Who, you know, it just probably not the way you go. I just think he's a strong 2A option behind McCaffrey is how you play it. The other thing is you think of that, you know, the guy pounding the rock is the guy scores touchdowns. Mason has not been great running touchdowns in. Carrendo was their first running back to score a running touchdown in a month.
And he should have had three at this point.
Yeah, that's right. He slid down for two others. Mason has not been good in the red zone. It's not his fault. The blocking hasn't been great, but that's just the facts. I say they get the ball first and goal at the eight, and they run the ball for negative one. It's like this has happened a lot. Happened early in this game, if I remember correctly. Then they go cash in three straight in the third quarter. I'll just bring up Purdy too. Terrible game last week. We all saw it. Probably his worst game as a 49er quarterback. You know, coupled with a maybe close to the Baltimore game last year. But I don't think any of us who have covered him doubted that there would be a bounce back. Cowboys are not a tough defense to play against, especially without Michael Parsons. But he looked good, not great. And as even Shanahan mentioned, he was off a little couple throws. The one to Debo on third down was a little behind him. I think he's definitely like he tries to avoid the defenders sometimes with the throws, doesn't want to lead people into him, but then he gets off of the throw. You just want to complete it first and foremost. But then he was fine. And he still didn't throw a pick anywhere. He wasn't really close to throwing a pick. And then he was really good when Kittle was breaking open. He was really good. That throw to Debo for the touchdown that was called back was beautiful. 66-yard touchdown. The Saubert, I think, had the holding call. That holding call might have let the play go on, but it was still not a good
play. That was a hell of a holding call. He went in motion. He holds the guy. He continues to hold him. And then he holds him a little longer. I mean, it was the most obvious hold in the history of holding calls. So, I think that was – I know that 49ers fans like to gripe over Bill Vinovich officiating, and for good reason.
But couple of big games there.
That was an obvious call.
Yeah, I just think the Purdy, we're seeing the Purdy baseline. He's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. Every quarterback has clunkers. He's had clunkers, but then he doesn't have two in a row. He doesn't have three in a row. He hasn't even had a spectacular game that like we saw last season when he's putting up 140 passer rating. He's three touchdowns, 270 yards, 72% completion rate. He hasn't really had one of those this season. It's coming. And he ran this time. I think that might be a little adjustment. Like, don't just hold it. If you see it, go. If there's an 8-yard gain, go get it. If there's a 5-yard gain on 3rd and 3, absolutely go get it. You worry about him taking the hits, but he can do it. And you might, they're going to be man to man. They're going to turn their backs to you running with your guys. It breaks down a little bit in the pocket. Just go. And you don't have to get 30 yards. Just get 12. I think that he can do that. That he can make that adjustment. He can make that read. And then he can still throw the ball where it needs to go. Make the read on that. He's just a good quarterback who will have a bad game here and there, but then he will put really big games when they really need him. I think he's the least of their worries. Absolutely think he's they are not in trouble at quarterback in any way for as long as Brock Purdy is playing like this. And I'm sure Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch think that too. Anything else you want to bring up here, Barros?
Only that third quarter was the closest they've come to looking like their 2023 selves. And Purdy was a big reason for that. But I think it's important to say that because it was, you know, without Brandon Ayuk, it was without Juwan Jennings. And they were as strong and as powerful and as overwhelming as they've looked. And
it was without Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, that's right, without Christian McCaffrey. And it was only one quarter, and that needs to be a triple underscore. But it tells you that they can get there. They can get on that track. I think they'll come out, look really good against the Buccaneers. This year's Buccaneers game is like last year's Jaguars game. Trip to Florida, coming off a bye. Last year the Jags were coming off their bye too. This year the Bucs are not. The Bucs have injury issues, in fact, at wide receiver. So a good chance to hit the ground running and to sort of recapture that 2023 power that this team had for most of the season, and to kind of set the tone for the second half. So that's that'll be the next task for these 49ers.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's in there. They have the talent. It's in there. And then they've got McCaffrey and Greenlaw, you know, whenever they're back, and Jake Moody, and Anders Carlson can make field goals. He cannot kickoffs.
Hey, Anders Carlson has not missed. They went without a miss from Anders Carlson and Matthew Wright on field goals.
Not extra points.
Extra points and kickoffs.
But they're 2 for 2 on tackles from the kickers, counting Moody. And they did not have a coverage breakdown. I want to point that out. We've been tough on Brian Schneider and his special teams unit. They did not have a breakdown last night.
Well, I wanted to point that out. They were not trying to kick the ball out of the they were not trying for touchbacks. And I think that's important, because when you're telling the coverage unit, listen, we're trying to lay it up, they're prepared and they're going to practice it. And I think that they did practice it more in the run-up to this game than they had. And it showed. I mean, they weren't lights out on coverage, but they didn't allow any big – there were no breakdowns.
I will agree. The Moody one where he got hurt, they expected that to be a touchback. They did not run hard. And I don't know. I mean, Moody's not a guaranteed touchback outdoors. Indoors maybe, but not outdoors. So I thought that was poor that they didn't run hard. They didn't expect that to be returned. They got a return right up them and then cost them their kicker, you know? So
I think you get lulled into thinking, touchback. It's hard to get up for those plays when, 90% of them result in a touchback.
Their mistake, their error. But yeah, the guys they got now are not kicking into the end zone. So you have to be ready to return it because they're not getting there. All right, Barros, we went 38 minutes.
It's a long one for us.
Man, we had some things to talk about. We might come back. I don't think we'll do one later this week. We'll see. Maybe there's a trade or two. But then we'll definitely be back next week. Trade deadline is November 5th. Something else is happening November 5th. But we will discuss the trade deadline. We'll not discuss the other thing on November 5th. And we have many things to see what they look like again when they come back off the bye in Tampa Bay. All right, Barros, there we go. That's go for today.